For any singer, achieving truly precise muscle control is, well, it's a major goal, isn't it? Whether you're just starting out or you're a seasoned professional.
It is. But the core difficulty is, how do you actually perceive what's going on inside? How do you refine those subtle vocal mechanics when you can't directly see them?
Exactly. These are hidden mechanisms, and that's what we're exploring today.
That control is just so crucial, and it goes beyond just improving the sound quality people hear.
Yes. So today we're doing a deep dive into some novel sensing methods for analyzing vocal technique.
Our main source here is a research paper by Chen and colleagues from 2024, a quite thorough study.
And it explores two advanced technologies. One is electromyography, EMG, and the other is ultrasonography.
Right. And our mission for you listening is to uncover how these methods might give us a clearer window into vocal muscle activity.
We want to see if they can differentiate skill levels and maybe offer some actionable insights for vocal training.
By the end, you should have a more nuanced appreciation for the physiology, the intricate mechanics behind producing your voice.
Oh, okay. So let's start with that foundational challenge in vocal training. We've touched on it, the critical role of muscle control.
It's fundamental. It's not just hitting the right notes. It's the precision underneath that enables sustained quality and control.
And traditional methods, well, they have their drawbacks.
They do. Take spectrograms. They analyze the sound, which is useful, of course.
But they don't give you an intuitive picture of how the sound is actually being produced physically.
Not at all. You see the result, the sound wave, but not the vocal production itself.
Then you have laryngoscopy. That does let you see the vocal cords in real time.
Yes, but it's generally seen as quite invasive. It's a clinical procedure, not something you'd use for, say, daily practice.
Definitely not. So this is where the researchers propose EMG and ultrasonography could come in.
As less invasive, potentially more intuitive ways to visualize what the vocal cords are doing.
So what were the key questions the research aimed to answer?
There were two main ones. First, how well can EMG and ultrasonography actually assess vocal pitch performance?
Okay.
And second, perhaps more crucially for training, how do users perceive the feedback? How do they interpret what these sensors are telling them?
Right, that user perception piece is vital. Let's get into the technologies themselves then. EMG electromyography. How does that work here?
EMG essentially captures the electrical signals generated by muscle activation.
Okay.
For vocal control, it's useful for looking at the cricothyroid muscle's activity. That muscle is key for adjusting pitch.
And how do they measure that?
In the study, they place small sensors on the skin on either side of the Adam's apple to pick up those signals.
Got it. And ultrasonography, we usually think of that for maybe medical scans.
It's the same principle. A non-invasive technique using sound waves to create images of internal structures.
And in this context?
Here, it's focused on visualizing the movement of the vocal cords, specifically looking at the thyroidnoid muscle.
Which muscle is that involved with?
That one helps shorten and tense the vocal cords. So for the study, participants held an ultrasound probe against their neck, pointing towards the vocal cords to get a real-time video feed.
So you have EMG picking up electrical activation patterns and ultrasonography giving a visual of the physical movement.
Precisely. Two different complementary views of the underlying mechanics.
Okay, so armed with these tools, the researchers set up a pre-experiment. The goal was to see if these methods could distinguish between singers of different abilities.
Exactly. Could they actually discern differences in vocal muscle activity between, say, beginners and experts using these technologies? They wanted to quantify any observable differences linked to skill.
Who took part in this first phase?
They had 16 participants, 6 female, 10 male, aged between 21 and 33.
A mix of skill levels.
Yes, quite a range. 10 beginners, 3 intermediate amateurs, and 3 experts, with the experts having over a decade of professional training each.
And what did they ask them to do?
The task was quite specific. They had to sing a vocal scale. G3 to A4 was the example given, holding each pitch for 2 seconds.
Okay.
And they followed an 80 beats per minute piano reference for timing. Each person used both the EMG setup and the ultrasonography device across several sessions to ensure the data was reliable.
Collecting all that data, EMG signals, ultrasound video.
Yeah.
How did they analyze it, especially to get measures like muscle stability or vocal cord length?
Good question. For the EMG data, they focused on extracting a measure of stability from that cricothyroid muscle activity.
How?
It involved cleaning up the raw signal first, removing noise. Then they used a technique called a Hilbert transform to calculate signal envelopes, basically outlining the overall shape of the muscle activation signal over time.
Right.
And from that envelope, they calculated stability using an equation that's conceptually similar to how shimmer, tiny fluctuations in loudness, is measured in acoustic analysis. They applied that idea to the muscle signal's consistency.
Okay, applying an acoustic concept to muscle activity and the ultrasound videos, how did they quantify movement from video?
That required some sophisticated image processing.
Mm-hmm.
They developed a landmark detector.
A landmark detector.
Yes. Software trained to automatically track 5 key points on the vocal cords in the video feed, the start point, and the inner and outer ends of each cord. By tracking those points frame by frame, they could accurately compute the true length of the vocal cords as they change during phonation,
providing an objective measure of that lengthening and shortening. So what were the results? Could these methods tell the experts from the beginners?
Yes, they could. Both technologies revealed statistically significant differences in muscle control across the skill groups.
Significant how?
Well, the analysis confirmed substantial distinctions, particularly between the experts and the complete beginners. It provided solid evidence that these tools can pick up on skill-related differences in muscle use.
Can you give some specifics? What did the EMG stability show?
Experts showed significantly better temporal stability in their EMG signals. This was especially clear at the higher pitches they sang, like F4 and G4.
Suggesting more consistent muscle control at those demanding pitches.
Exactly. Advanced, steady control. And with the vocal cord length from the ultrasound.
What about that?
Experts displayed a more stable range of vocal cord lengths as they sang the scale. Their adjustments were more controlled and consistent compared to the beginners.
So it visually demonstrated more precise management of the vocal cords?
Correct. It showed how they managed elongation and shortening with greater precision.
So these initial results were quite promising. Both EMG stability and the ultrasonography measure of vocal cord length seem to be effective indicators of a singer's skill level.
Yes. EMG giving that temporal stability perspective, and ultrasound offering a more, perhaps intuitive visual feedback about the physical changes. It suggested real potential for training.
Which naturally leads to the next phase, the user study. What was the goal there?
Building on the pre-experiment, the user study aimed to evaluate how novice users actually understood feedback related to their pitch performance using these systems.
And to use that understanding to inform how future training systems might be designed.
Precisely. It was about the user experience and comprehension. How do people interact with this kind of biofeedback?
And the participants were different this time? Novices?
Yes. This group was 12 participants, 6 male, 6 female, aged 24 to 34. None had professional training, but they did have some casual singing experience monthly. Karaoke was the benchmark mentioned. So, familiar with singing, but not formally trained.
And how was this study structured? What were the conditions?
They set up 3 conditions. A baseline condition where participants just got standard audio feedback hearing themselves sing.
Okay, the control.
Then an EMG condition where they got audio feedback plus visual feedback from the EMG sensors.
And the third.
An ultrasonography condition. Audio feedback plus the real-time visual from the ultrasound probe.
Right. And what did a session look like for a participant in, say, the EMG condition?
Each session followed a strict protocol. First, a warm-up. Then they measured a baseline performance singing without a vocal guide.
Before any training feedback.
Correct. Then came a 5-minute practice session with a vocal guide. This part also included a quick explanation of vocal muscle structure and seeing an expert model vocalizing using the technology.
Giving them context for the feedback.
Yes. After the practice, they measured performance again. Then participants filled out questionnaires about their experience. And finally, there was an overall interview.
Okay, thorough. Let's get to the results of this user study. What about EMG and how participants felt about their control?
This is quite revealing. Participants using the EMG feedback reported a significantly heightened sense of controllability over their voice.
They felt more in control.
Yes. Statistical tests on the questionnaire data showed they preferred EMG over ultrasound regarding feelings of planned behavior and being in full control. They felt more empowered by the EMG visuals compared to baseline or ultrasound.
But I sense a but coming. Was there a catch?
There was. And it's a key finding. Despite reporting feeling more in control, the objective measure of EMG stability, the consistency of their muscle activation, actually tended to decrease after practice with the EMG feedback.
Decrease. So they felt more control, but the data showed less stable muscle activity.
Exactly. A paradox. The decrease was statistically significant for several pitches, V3, C3, and E4. It's a fascinating counterintuitive result.
Why would that happen, feeling more control leading to less stability?
The researchers proposed it might be due to cognitive load or distraction. Perhaps focusing too intently on interpreting the raw, potentially complex, EMG visuals interfered with the more automatic subconscious muscle coordination needed for stability.
Like trying too hard.
Sort of. One participant, P8, said something telling. The visual feedback draws most of my attention. I then try to control my vocal according to the visuals. It suggests the effort of controlling based on the visual might have overridden smoother, more innate control.
That has implications beyond just singing for any kind of biofeedback training.
Indeed. It highlights the importance of how feedback is presented. Raw data isn't always better if it's overwhelming.
Okay, let's turn to ultrasonography then. What did the user study find there regarding vocal length control?
Here, the results were more aligned with expectations. There was a noticeable increase in the average vocal cord lengths participants achieved for each pitch after the training session.
An increase?
Yes, particularly for pitches A3, B3, and C4. This suggests they gained better control over elongating their vocal cords, which aligns with the pre-experiment finding that experts tend to use longer, more stable vocal cord lengths.
So the visual feedback seemed directly helpful for that specific aspect.
It seems so. Participant P7 commented, I noticed the teacher's vocal cords slowly widened, so I paid attention to reproducing this. That direct visual modeling was effective.
Were there any downsides reported with the ultrasound?
Yes. It wasn't perfect. Some participants found it difficult to translate the visual into actual control.
Okay.
P1 said, good to see how the muscle moves, but hard to control.
Understanding versus executing.
Right. And there were also some mentions of usability issues. Just physically holding and positioning the ultrasound probe correctly could be a bit awkward for some.
So potential for ergonomic improvements there too. Okay, let's try to synthesize this. What are the main conclusions from the research overall?
Well, the study clearly demonstrates that both EMG and ultrasonography are effective tools. They can detect differences in vocal cord muscle activity related to skill level. They reveal quite substantial differences between novices and experts.
And they each offer different strengths.
Correct. EMG provides detailed insights into muscle activation patterns, the timing and intensity, particularly for that pitch-regulating cricothyroid muscle.
While ultrasonography gives you that direct visual of the physical dynamics, the length changes, the movement, especially of the thyroarytenoid muscle.
Exactly.
But the study also highlights areas needing work. For EMG, that disconnect between perceived control and measured stability is crucial.
Yes, it strongly suggests the need for interface refinement, making the EMG feedback more intuitive, perhaps processing it somehow rather than showing raw signals might be key to avoiding that distraction effect.
And for ultrasonography.
It clearly showed effectiveness in helping novices improve vocal length control, which is a positive outcome. The main challenges seem to be translating that visual understanding into fine motor control and perhaps some usability tweaks.
So looking ahead, what do the researchers suggest for future vocal training systems based on this work?
They emphasize the need for intuitive interfaces, as we discussed. Also, aligning the feedback with expert models seems beneficial, as seen with the ultrasound visual, and incorporating longer, structured training routines built around these types of feedback.
It certainly seems there's considerable potential here, using these advanced sensing technologies to offer singers unprecedented insights into their own muscle control.
The potential to move beyond just listening towards visualizing and understanding the underlying physiology during practice is quite significant.
And that brings us to a final thought to leave you with. Consider the finding with EMG, increased self-reported control didn't align with objective stability, possibly due to overattention to the feedback.
That paradox.
It raises a broader question, doesn't it? What does this imply for biofeedback training in other fields beyond singing? Think sports, rehabilitation, skill acquisition.
Where does that line sit between helpful feedback and cognitive overload?
Exactly. It suggests the interplay between our conscious perception of control and the actual objective physiological response might be much more complex, much more nuanced than we often assume. Something to ponder about the future of using technology to enhance human performance.